This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Congress responded to the report of the 9/11 Commission with a series of hearings and proposals to restructure American intelligence. But at a hearing last month, Commission Vice Chairman Lee Hamilton warned that Congress must also reform itself.
When you're talking about reform of committee jurisdiction, you're talking about allocation of power. And power is the name of the game. Now, what we're saying to you here is that this threat of terrorism is so urgent, so long-term, so difficult, that not only must we do some reorganization of the executive branch, we also have to reorganize the Congress as well. And I'll be quick to admit that it's a lot easier to say this from outside the body than from inside the body. But I think you folks are at a crunch point. And I think you're exactly right when you say that if another incident were to happen and the Congress had done nothing to put its own house in order, I think the institution and maybe some of you individually would be heavily criticized for not acting. In other words, I think there's a political risk here.
The 9/11 Commission report describes the current system in Congress as dysfunctional. If Congress does not change itself, the report argues, other suggested reforms, a national intelligence director, national counterterrorism center, etc., just won't work. But, as you just heard from Lee Hamilton, no one believes it will be easy. Later in the program, long-lost documents, allegations of forgery, President Bush, the National Guard, and the media. But first, the fifth in our series on the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Today, congressional reform. If you have questions about how Congress funds and reviews intelligence and why that's critical to intelligence reform, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Tim Romer, a member of the 9/11 Commission, a former Democratic congressman from Indiana, currently president of the Center for National Policy. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. My pleasure.
Speaking as a former congressman, you know that this is going to be very, very difficult to do. Explain to us just why.
Great place to start. First of all, I believe, having served in Congress and served on the Intelligence Committee, that they are in a unique position with a very, very poignant and powerful responsibility. As John Quincy Adams said, after he was president and served in the House, that was the best position he ever served in. I have the highest respect for our senators and congressmen. However, at this point in time, we need to make sure that they have the moral authority when they're looking to reorganize the CIA that is badly broken, the FBI that borders on dysfunction in some areas, other areas of the executive branch, and to create a new national intelligence director, that they recognize they have their own problems and they have the opportunity to correct them. They are part of the problem, but they also have the historic responsibility and are in the unique position of being part of the answer, too. Why do we need to do this? About five reasons. One, because they have not reformed themselves. Not since about 1946 have they taken on significant reforms to reorganize the national security organization within the respective bodies. Two, they have not performed their oversight function ably and agilely enough. Three, they have not worked with the executive branch to formulate the guidelines on counterterrorism and terrorism policy. Four, terrorism throughout the 90s was a second or third tier priority for Congress. And fifth, too oftentimes Congress looked to delegate this responsibility to outside commissions. Aspen Brown and the Gilmore and Hart-Rudman commissions that made good recommendations that maybe Congress could have made internally, but then they never acted upon those recommendations. I hope Congress knows they have the responsibility to do it now with the same kind of unity of purpose and effort that this commission has shown and that the American people showed after 9/11.
But it's still not going to be easy. The driving force is there, but you're talking, as we heard Lee Hamilton talking about there, you're talking about power, and people give up power only very grudgingly.
Listen, Neil, it's not only power. You listen to people in Washington, D.C., the most powerful city in the world, and you learn about power and money, power and budgets. We're talking about membership assignments on committees that need to be reorganized. You don't deal with more delicate and sensitive things on Capitol Hill than a member's assignment to a particular committee and how they can do something for their state or their district. That is a very difficult thing for the body of Congress to deal with. And in addition to membership on committees, we're dealing with the power of turf, jurisdiction. What committees are going to be able to have Tom Ridge come up and do a very visible and public relations-oriented hearing before them, even though they might not be able to do much about that with the jurisdiction of their committee. One of the things we looked at on the 9/11 Commission is Director Ridge, who I served with in Congress. I have a lot of respect for him. He's got a very, very difficult job in building this department. Has to go up about 105 times to Congress to report to 88 different committees and subcommittees. I'd rather have him do his job and for Congress to pick out one committee in the House and the Senate for Mr. Ridge or whoever Senator Kerry might appoint if he's elected, whoever President Bush might reappoint to that position. They shouldn't be spending 90% of their time going up to talk to Congress.
Well, you talked about Tom Ridge and the Department of Homeland Security. Well, Congress has reformed itself in one respect. They did set up a committee to review Homeland Security.
Well, they did. And they did it on a temporary basis. It's a select committee, which means they have to be reauthorized, and they have not taken that step yet. The Senate has not created a parallel body, and we still see the problem with the assignments to the select committee on the House side, which has resulted in that committee probably not having the kind of power and authority that they need. And still, Tom Ridge goes up there too often and talks to too many different committees. Mm-hmm. We've also talked about significant reform on the intelligence side for oversight. Oversight is dysfunctional. It is broken. It is unglamorous in the House and the Senate. But it is still one of the most essential things and responsibilities that a member of Congress can participate in.
We're talking with 9/11 Commissioner Tim Romer. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get a caller in. Michael joins us from Maplewood, Missouri.
Hi, thanks for taking my call today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always a little bit suspicious when committees come forward and say that we need to consolidate and reorganize. And I wanted to ask that, you know, given the fact that Congress is a representative body, does the congressman or the committee person see this act as being something in the interest of the American public? Are we the primary stakeholder in this reorganization, or is this something that's to benefit the administration and the intelligence community or Congress itself? And I'd be interested in hearing what priority he sees being placed on this process.
Okay, Michael. Tim Romer?
Michael, it's a great question. I think the primary beneficiary of reorganization and reform in Congress is not only the American people, and that it can be driven by the American people, but that the safety and security of the American people is at stake here. If Congress, which is not really reorganized, its badly splintered committee jurisdiction system and its almost dysfunctional oversight system does not take this on, as they are taking on significant executive branch oversight, one, they lose the moral authority. Two, we may be attacked by al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has attacked the trains in Madrid. They've attacked synagogues in Turkey. They've attacked nightclubs in Bali. They may be partially responsible for, although we don't know what has happened in Russia, in Belsan, with a school. We know that they're going to come after the United States abroad or domestically again, and it'll probably be soon. I mean, we felt the claws of al-Qaeda on our shoulders as we had our deliberations on this 9/11 commission. And we appreciated the American people's support in these hearings, and now they're calling their senators and congressmen to say, we need to see these 41 recommendations passed to make sure that Congress makes the reforms internally and externally for our benefit, for our security, so that we can do this more efficiently in Congress and not have everybody responsible and nobody accountable for a terrorism policy being implemented the right way. So, Michael, I think you are the beneficiary of this, and the American people need to make sure that Congress is undertaking their own reform in addition to the other reforms that you've heard a lot about, like the creation of a strong and powerful national intelligence director. And let me just say this part and conclude is it's important to do your oversight in Congress because that's the most powerful disinfectant we have is sunshine and oversight, accountability for tax dollars, making sure public programs and government policies are working the right way. It's important for that oversight function, but it's also important because if we create this powerful national intelligence director, you're going to have a streamlined, powerful oversight function in Congress to make sure that person is doing their job.
And make sure that person doesn't go too far in doing their job.
Absolutely. They stay within their boundaries.
Michael, thanks very much for the phone call.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You talk about the dysfunctional system in Congress now. How did that play out in the run-up to 9/11? How did that contribute to the problems that enabled 9/11 to go ahead without being detected?
I think one of the problems, Neil, was just a difficulty both in the executive branch and the legislative branches to take the lead, to take the direction, to be a leader in where do we go after the Cold War. What kind of vision is there for the CIA to step away from looking with primarily a satellite system and some human intelligence centered on the former Soviet Union to not the old paradigm of guards, guns, and gates, but the new paradigm of a terrorist in Tora Bora on a laptop encrypted computer driving in a pickup truck that is targeting America or Americans? How do we begin to bolster our human intelligence capabilities? What should the CIA and human intelligence look like in the next 10 or 20 years? Congress was not good at looking down the line and working with the executive branch on that. Secondly, Congress was distracted by some other foreign policy considerations, very important ones. They were looking at Russia, China, Bosnia, Kosovo. They were looking at challenges with missile defense. What kind of defense systems do we try to buy in the future? Some very important issues. But terrorism and counterterrorism were not part of that. And lastly, they really have not looked significantly at internal reorganization. They tried in 1994. One of the efforts since 1977 when they created the intelligence oversight committees to have a powerful oversight function, which has not really prevailed to this day. And so we have to get back to the hard work of looking at our intelligence committees. How do we make sure they have sufficient subpoena power? How do they do some work in the sunshine and open hearings? How do they work with the community to rebuild human intelligence and language capabilities and diversity so that we have the kind of agents that don't stick out like a sore thumb in places like Indonesia or Pakistan or other parts of the world?
Congressman Romer, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Tim Romer, a former congressman from the state of Indiana and a member of the 9/11 Commission. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking with two members of the United States Senate, Harry Reid of Nevada, a Democrat, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, a Republican. They're coming up with proposals to modify how the Senate oversees intelligence. We'll also take more of your calls and emails, 800-989-8255, email totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the prospects of congressional reform in light of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. If you have questions, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN at NPR.org. And we mentioned the 9/11 Commission wants to reform congressional oversight of intelligence and homeland security. Nothing, though, can happen unless Congress is committed to reform itself. In August, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist and Minority Leader Tom Daschle created a task force to explore the Commission's recommendations. Joining us now are the co-chairs of this working group, Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, the Senate Majority Whip. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. Good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be with you.
And Senator Harry Reid, a Democrat from Nevada, is the Senate Minority Whip. He's with us by phone from McCarran Airport in Las Vegas, and it's good of you to be with us today, too.
Glad to be with you.
Senator Reid, you told reporters last week, anytime you try to change the status quo as far as committees, it's very difficult, but you think people exaggerate how hard it is to change.
I think if there's the will, it can be done. Of course it's difficult to change, because anytime you change rules, people gain and people lose, and senators are very careful about what prerogatives they give up. But I think we have a situation here where we have a national issue that's focused on the evil of terrorism, and I think it's time we change some of these rules.
Senator McConnell, the systems that have been set up in the Senate obviously go back a very long way, tried and tested. Do they need to be blown up now?
Well, they don't all go back that long. I mean, the Senate Intelligence Committee was created in the 70s. Harry is entirely correct. It is always difficult to rearrange turf. Having said that, I think we're both optimistic that the Senate will act not just on the changes in the executive branch, which were covered with 39 of the 41 recommendations from the 9/11 Commission, but that we will make substantial changes in ourselves and how we deal with oversight. There's a good attitude on the bipartisan working group that Harry and I chair. People have the sense that they're involved in something that's important to the safety of the country. And we've had a high level of cooperative comments from our colleagues, and look forward to doing something important.
As you know, one of the proposals that's been talked about is to unify the authorization and appropriating authority in one committee. Now, you're the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. That would mean you lose some of your power. Is that something you think is a good idea?
Well, it's, of course, there are a number of changes that have been suggested. That is one of them. And as I indicated early on, I didn't mention earlier, but I'll mention now, the commission didn't tell us exactly what we should do in every instance. They gave us a broad outline, and in some instances they gave us alternatives. And one alternative they gave us is what you suggested. And so we're going to look at that and the other things that Lee Hamilton and Governor Keene recommended through their commission. And as Mitch mentioned, we're dealing with senators who, Mitch and I have been around a while, but we have members of our task force that have been there a lot longer than we have. But this is a time where we all acknowledge there's something needs to be done. And I think we would show a lot of class, for lack of a better description, if we did something now rather than put it off.
Senator McConnell, you mentioned at a news conference yesterday that any changes that will be made should be done by rules rather than by statutes. What's the difference and why?
Well, the committees in the Senate are organized not by statute, but by internal Senate rules. And virtually all of the changes that the 9/11 Commission recommended for ourselves, that is how Congress deals with oversight, are not typically done by statute, but by rule of the Senate. As a practical matter, the only difference is a Senate resolution doesn't go to the President and doesn't go to the House. It's sort of how we structure ourselves. And most of what we'll be doing will be done by Senate resolution.
Could I ask you, Senator McConnell, a little bit more about that proposal to unite the authorization and appropriation authority within one committee? Is that something you think is a wise idea?
Well, it's too early to tell what our working group will recommend. We're in the process now of sort of sifting through the various suggestions, alternatives. then we'll meet again as a bipartisan group and see what we think ought to be done. And I think it's premature to suggest any particular changes, but I do think, and I know Harry thinks, that we will be recommending significant changes.
Senator Reid, what do you think the timetable is?
The timetable is what we can work out. We would like to do something this year, and we'd like to do it before we leave for Thanksgiving or maybe even October 8th. We need to do it as quickly as possible. I think the one thing I'd like your listeners, though, to understand is they hear a lot about the partisan bickering that goes on in the United States Senate and Congress generally, and there is too much of that. But I think I have been so impressed, I think Mitch would underline this and underscore it, with the cooperation, the bipartisan nature of every meeting we've held. Mitch and I have met many times ourselves, the two of us. We've met with Democrats alone, Republicans alone. We've met together. And there's just a real good feeling that we need to do something, and we're going to do our very best to set aside partisan differences, and I think we're on that road right now.
All right, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Leon joins us from Philadelphia.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I guess that adversarialness is good for democracy, but this presidential campaign is getting kind of nasty, and I wonder what effect that has on the bipartisan spirit necessary to protect us.
Well, the presidential election is going to be close. It's a tough election, but every member of this task force I mentioned earlier have been around a long time. We have our role as the legislative branch of government. The executive branch of government does their thing. We're going to do everything that we can to set aside whatever's going on in the presidential race and do what we think is best for the legislative branch of government.
Senator McConnell, if you wanted to add to that, you can. But I also wanted to ask you, a third of the members of the Senate, of course, are running for re-election. Does that schedule get in the way?
No, I think we have a good chance of completing our task before the November election, and if not, we'll complete it shortly after that. Harry is entirely correct. I don't sense any members of the Senate, whether they're running for election or not, acting in a terribly partisan way over the issue of how we reorganize the Senate to provide better oversight for whatever changes we make in the executive branch. I think the spirit of bipartisanship has been very much in evidence during this whole process, and I expect that to last all the way through to the end.
Leon, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Jeff. Jeff's calling from Buffalo, New York.
My question was, I wanted to know if reform is really necessary, why we are so convinced that intelligence failed, and if 9/11 occurred under Bill Clinton's reign, would we have been more likely to point fingers and say the intelligence system was working and you didn't heed any of the warnings? I'm kind of baffled by this.
Senator Reid, what examples do you have of the way the system needs to be reformed?
I think one reason that we've been able to work in such a bipartisan fashion is the outstanding example set by Republican Governor Tom Kaine of New Jersey and Democratic Congressman Lee Hamilton of Indiana. They were bipartisan. There was no placing blame on any person or administration. They probably could have done that, but they avoided it. And I think it's a right way to go. What has happened has happened. We simply are not going to let it happen again. We're going to have better, as far as Mitch and I's responsibility, we're going to do a better job of making sure that this Congress and future Congresses have the ability to have adequate oversight. And we feel that with the committee set up the way that it is, that it's not possible. So we're not here to cast blame to anyone.
I understand that. I guess I'm a little bit worried that reform, to me, is synonymous with adding more red tape and more bureaucracy. Is that, hopefully, can we avoid that?
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm not sure we're adding anything here. We're trying to structure both the executive branch and the congressional oversight in a way that is more responsive to the problem. The goal here is not to set up new bureaucracy, but to continue the progress that's been made since 9/11, and a substantial amount of progress has been made in breaking down whatever remaining barriers there are between various intelligence agencies and communicating with each other, thereby providing better information to decision makers at the top, and to restructure the congressional side so that, for example, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, doesn't have to spend a huge percentage of his time running around testifying to different committees and subcommittees which have pieces of jurisdiction over his department. So the idea here is to have less, not more.
Jeff, thank you.
Thank you.
Here's an email question from Linda Vining in Mount Vernon, Ohio. It seems clear, she writes, Congress is structurally and philosophically incapable of decisive response. I'd like to know if Congress is willing to relinquish its control to a single administrative function so that lives can be saved. I, for one, consider the idea of protection from terrorism performed by committee to be a laughable notion.
Well, if I were a lawyer and in court, I would object to that question for a lot of reasons, but the fact is that Congress has, in the past, been able to respond under the terms of our Constitution as being an equal branch of government, and we're going to do everything we can that we're going to improve the congressional oversight. But in the process, we're going to keep in mind we have a Constitution and a legislative branch of government, and we're not going to give up our power to the executive branch of government.
Yeah, the question seems to imply that it's Congress' job to to be the CIA. That's in the executive branch. The executive branch is the branch that employs the people who go out and gather intelligence and fight wars and do that sort of thing. Our job is to provide oversight, because we're elected by the people of the United States, to make sure that the funds are being spent properly and that things are going as they should. So it is not our job in Congress to fight the war or to gather the intelligence, but to provide oversight for those who do.
Senator McConnell, Senator Reid spoke earlier about your meetings amongst each other and with various members of the United States Senate. As you know, obviously the House of Representatives has a big role in this as well. Have you been speaking with representatives from the House to see how they might be reformed and if the two kinds of reforms can be made consistent?
Not yet, but I think there's a great likelihood that we will coordinate. For example, after 9/11, the two appropriation committees, the House Appropriations Committee and the Senate Appropriations Committee, created a Homeland Security Subcommittee. We both did the same thing. So now there is one subcommittee of appropriations in both the House and Senate that deals with the subject of Homeland Security. So in all likelihood, we will do pretty much the same thing, so the two branches are operating in terms of oversight in the same way.
Senator Reid, one of the proposals, as you know, is for a joint House-Senate committee to do the whole thing. Is that a good idea?
As Mitch said earlier, Neil, we're not going to here talk about specifics. We have a task force of 20 other people, and we have to take our suggestions and recommendations to them. We're reviewing this, the one you suggested, and all others, and take back to our members. We feel that we've made tremendous progress in less than 2 weeks, but as far as being specific with you or your listeners, it just would be inappropriate now and unfair to our members.
Well, when you guys get it done, we'd welcome you back to talk about your proposal. We'd be most interested to speak with both of you. In any case, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Neil, anyone that likes baseball as much as you, I'm happy to come back on the program.
Well, thank you, Senator Reid, and we appreciate you taking time out at the airport there in Las Vegas to speak with us today. Also, our thanks to Mitch McConnell, who's at his office here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joining us now with some perspective on what people outside of Congress are thinking about these proposals is Paul Light, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a professor of public service at New York University. He's with us by phone from his office in New York, and good to have you back on the program, Paul.
Nice to be with you.
We've heard from Commissioner Romer. We've heard from the two senators. What about you? How likely do you think Congress can reform itself, in the timetable that we've been hearing, by or shortly after the election?
Well, these are formidable voices that you've just heard from. They are not lightweights in the use of senatorial power, but They're up against some pretty strong historical tradition. For example, the notion of combining appropriations with authorization is an extraordinarily difficult prospect, and I'd say pretty much of a long shot.
This is something that a lot of people who don't cover Congress or follow it closely get a little bit confused, but it's an important check and balance as far as Congress is concerned.
There are checks between the two chambers of Congress, between House and Senate. They're on different electoral schedules and terms, and there are checks within each chamber between the spending committees, the one that actually say what gets spent, and the ones who say what the money gets spent for. And there is some check and balance there. There are intense battles between the two types of committees and the two chambers. Some of that is good. It produces better policy in theory, and some of it produces extraordinary delay and turf consciousness. So I think we have to hope for something in between a radical restructuring and the kind of grand chaos that we currently have with a rather large number of committees that oversee the homeland security intelligence functions.
When we talk about people might be losing power,
yeah.
who might lose power, and what kind of power is it?
Well, you know, being a committee chair carries great perquisites. You have extra staff that you control. You command the agenda of committees. You lose subcommittee chairs as well in this kind of reorganization. In theory and in practice, many members of Congress believe that committee chairmanships secure greater reelection opportunities and certainly do drive resources back to the home state. So there's real power at stake in terms of personal prestige and as in terms of actual resources going back home.
There are also the fact that the current intelligence committees in both the Senate and the House are select committees. That means they're not permanent committees, which means that if you're a chairman of a subcommittee chairman of a select committee, you can also be a chairman of another committee.
That's correct, and you show some mastery of the arcane in noting the difference between select and permanent. There are all sorts of rules that govern these committees, including term limits now on how long you can serve as chairman of committees. My personal view is that you've got to reform the entire committee structure. It's been a long time since we've taken a good look at it, so that you redistribute the power. Basically, you inflict pain on everybody, and in doing so, you might actually get something done. But this is very difficult work that they're outlining for themselves, and they're being very cautious, as you just heard, these two senators about committing to anything at this particular point.
We're talking with Paul Light about proposals to restructure Congress. The proposals, of course, put forward by the 9/11 Commission. This is our fifth program in the series on the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. When we come back from a short break, we're going to take a couple more of your questions on this subject. We're also going to be talking about the issue of President Bush's service in the National Guard so many years ago and newly found documents, allegations, some of them may have been forged, and the media's role in all of this. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about the 9/11 Commission's recommendations on congressional oversight. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255 or email us, totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Paul Light, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a professor of public service at New York University. And let's get a caller on the line. Greg joins us from Bixby, Oklahoma.
Yes. Hi, Neil. Am I there?
Yes, you're on the air, Greg. Go ahead.
I always enjoy your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks.
A couple things, and I'll try not to be too long, but it seems like there's going to be several layers of bureaucracy, not just the one in Congress to cut through with all the different committee chairmanships and all the turf battles there, but also since 85% of our intelligence is done through the Pentagon, that's also going to be another layer of bureaucracy and turf wars to fight through. I think it's ironic, too. I think about how it took a handful of brave Americans to bring down Flight 93 before it probably was going to crash into the Capitol and may have at least destroyed the place that Congress meets, if not a lot of congressmen. I wish they'd keep that in mind. But my question was, I wish we had a system on a national level like the states do, like California, where we could have national referendums to cut through some of the partisanship. And I'll be off the air. Thanks.
Okay, Greg. Thanks very much for the call. Well, Paul Light, direct democracy as they have in California with referenda, is that an appropriate way to address these kinds of problems?
I think the caller's first point is really on target, that, you know, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to restructure the congressional committees and create a national intelligence directorate unless we do substantial reorganization and flattening of these bloated towers of hierarchy that currently characterize the intelligence community. We're talking a lot about adding new control and new coordination. I think that's fine. I think Congress can do a better job. But, down below, there are just layer upon layer of needless bureaucracy. We keep looking at it and saying, can't we get rid of some of it so the information can flow up faster? I think the House is currently thinking of some ways of dealing with it, but I don't think you're going to get at it through a referenda. And I'm not sure that the history of referenda and initiative has been one that has produced less bureaucracy over time, to be real honest.
And Congress manages to write its rules so that it is exempt from the rules it writes for everybody else.
That's correct. That has always been an issue. It was supposed to be addressed in the Republican Revolution that began in 1994, and there are still problems getting Congress to follow the laws that it imposes on the rest of the nation.
Let's get another caller on the line. Eli's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi there.
Hi.
How likely is it that the Intelligence Oversight Committees can be reorganized without reorganizing the entire committee structure? And how realistic is it to expect that if they don't reorganize the entire committee structure, that anything will be done with intelligence? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Eli.
Well, it's a slippery slope. You get started with intelligence, and suddenly you find that you've got to redo education and labor committees. You've got to tackle the overall appropriations process more generally. Congress, every 30 or 40 years, undertakes a pretty sweeping reorganization of its structure to keep up with changing issues and changing priorities, and it may be that we've got to have something like that around the corner. I think the senators who were discussing this earlier are saying, well, that's all well and good. It'd be nice to have a sweeping reorganization, but what are we going to do about intelligence now? And I admire them for their fortitude in trying to take it on. It may be that the better strategy is to undertake a sweeping reorganization, but I'd put the odds of that one at next to zero, and I'd put the odds of the intelligence reorganization right now is pretty low.
Pretty low.
Pretty low. I just think it's so difficult. People will say publicly that they're in favor of it as long as it doesn't touch their committee in private. So it's fine to collapse this committee or that committee, just don't touch me. And when everything comes down to the final cuts and the final decisions, I think Congress is going to coalesce around a National Intelligence Directorate and may well get away with telling the public that it's going to work on congressional reform maybe next year. And I think that that's a likely scenario, not a remote one, I'm afraid.
Paul Light, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Paul Light, senior fellow at Brookings Institution, a professor of public service at New York University, with us by phone from his office in New York.